I think now. Coming back down, the ISM index just released today for November was still below the 50-point mark. Above 50 indicates that things are moving positively in a direction. Below 50 possibly means some more contraction. We've now had the third month in a row for the manufacturing sector being below the 50 mark. And as that news came out, by the way, the market was above 9,000 for the Dow in the morning. Then this report came out, and that when I left my office, it was down by 25 points. So it was back below 8,900. Unemployment rate is holding at about 5.7%, and consumer confidence, we've had some recent drops, but then November has also been another uptick in it, which is a good sign. And on Oregon's economy, we've seen this slide before, showing the durable goods manufacturing as a share of output for the state. It's very high for Oregon relative to other states and relative to the U.S. Average. The other graph I showed you about business investments coming down quite dramatically, that really hits our manufacturing sector, because our manufacturing sector tends to be one that makes the business investment goods that other businesses buy in order to make other final goods and services. So when those investments are down, it definitely hits us pretty hard. Manufacturing employment, also very volatile through the business cycle. We proportionally have a higher set of employment relative to the U.S. average, and also the neighbors that we deal with. Exports, one bright point. We're starting to see, as you see that red dashed line has gone back up into the positive growth area, although exports are still down from their heights before, we have had some improvement. Part of that is a little bit more improvement in Pacific Rim economies, and the U.S. exchange rate, the U.S. dollar starting to slide down, soften a little bit, which helps our exports. This is historical of the Oregon employment growth through the third quarter of this year. You can see sort of the bouncing around there at 2002. It's kind of indication of what we're calling a jobless recovery for our state.
Tom, going back to that exports slide, that's just manufacturing exports?
No, that's all exports out of the country. That would include your agricultural products, okay. Lumber and wood. But the dominant one in this graph is electronics.
Okay, I was going to ask you if you had identified that by sector.
Okay. I don't have it in this presentation, but we do have that available.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Just wondering, Tom, what the strike, what effect the strike had on those?
The strike, as we can tell, that 10-day lockout had some after effects. You know, there were definitely container problems. There were ships that still had to get across the bar in the Columbia to get in here. That has pretty much mitigated itself. We definitely had some agricultural products didn't make it, got destroyed on the docks. But overall, on net, it wasn't much of an impact.
Tom, one more question, I guess, on the exports before we leave that. You don't need to go back to the slide.
Okay.
But if electronics is leading the trend up, are other sectors trending up as well, but at a lesser rate, or are we seeing some flattening or decline in other sectors in manufacturing, agriculture, timber, things? What's happening in those areas?
Mr. Chair, the other areas have had a slight positive aspect to them, and not as strong as the electronics. Agricultural products up a little bit. Lumber and wood has been up some. But those are kind of the major sectors. Positive, yeah. We're seeing some indication they've gotten a little better. Not as strong as the electronics, though. Unemployment rates, Oregon once again takes the number one spot. We had given that up to Washington for a couple of months, but now we're back on top. You can see, though, that most of the states in the West and those that we sort of consider as the new high-tech type states like Arizona, Texas, Idaho, also have unemployment rates where their ranking is in the lower half of the states. By region, you can see that 7% unemployment in the Portland metro area. This is once again an indication of a area that's been hit harder, I would say, because of the manufacturing decline than other sectors of the state. Though, you want to keep in mind, this is a look at October. Your eastern counties tend to have their lowest unemployment rates this time of the year because of seasonal factors. This is the jobless recovery graph, and what I want to point.
Yes, Representative, sure. Could you amplify on that a little bit? What jobs are available in the rural areas in the winter?
Where you're having a harvest season closing out, September and October, because they do not produce seasonally adjusted unemployment rates for the county level in our state, they will move around based on the seasons. So in September and October, with a harvest-type area, you tend to have the lowest unemployment rates there.
Thank you.
But not unusual to have them double-digit, by the way, by the time we get to January and February.
Yeah, thank you.
This was the manufacturing employment. Oh,
you're going the wrong
way. Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I would have started speaking backwards, you would have really been in trouble. The jobless recovery. That bottom yellow line there shows what might be our present recovery. If we believe that this recession ended in January of this year, you can see that in the 80 through 82 recession, as we were coming out of that recession, growth was not very strong, but we still were about 2.5% above when we started the recovery, out to 8 months into that recovery. And then the recession that we hardly felt at all, the 90-91, our growth picked up quite rapidly coming out of that. But now we're very much mirroring what's happening in the U.S. with what we're calling a jobless recovery. We're 9 months out, this would be up to September, and we're still not even 1% above in employment from that point. Essentially, just a flat growth coming out. And part of this is due, I think, to still overcapacity in the manufacturing sector. Their demand has gone up some. They're producing more. But they're doing it with less of a labor supply than they needed before. Productivity is still fairly high, so they can produce more with less resources. As this recovery starts to take hold and gets a little stronger, we should see this employment growth starting to boost up as we get into 2003. This is our forecast for the economy. We're looking at a very mild growth the fourth quarter of this year that we're in right now of only 0.3%, keeping with that theme that this is still a jobless recovery. But as we get into 2003, we expect things to pick up. We're looking at a 1.3% increase of jobs in 2003, 2.4% in 2004, and 2.1% in 2005. This is a look at our per capita income. You can see that we lost ground to the U.S. average, both through the Asian financial crisis, and then before we were able to come out of that, then the overall recession in the U.S. and global economies. So it's just a long, hard road. Some of the risk factors to our forecast. The forecast basically is saying jobless recovery, finishing off 2002, mild recovery in 2003, building strength as we end that year and then into 2004. The upside risk is that actually the economic recovery could be stronger than we're expecting. The downside risk, it could be further off into the future. The Congress and the Federal Reserve, it's possible that the stimulative policies followed by these bodies could cause our forecast to be a little conservative. Things could actually be stronger than we're looking at. We still have extremely low interest rates in the economy given to us by the Federal Reserve. We've got a lot of federal spending programs that are out there. We may not directly be affected by the defense budget. We have a few firms that are in Oregon, but indirectly, all war goods seem to use computer chips. International conditions, this is a catch-all term. I think the downside risk is stronger here. Of course, if there was another similar terrorist attack to September 11th, that would be a horrible situation and would definitely hurt our economy, both nationally and here in Oregon. We also have the war with Iraq to deal with, although some analysts are believing that it's the uncertainty may be worse for our economy than actually some action being taken and people knowing that we're going down an actual path. So possibilities of there of a short-term drop if the war with Iraq happened very quickly, if it was similar to the situation with the Gulf War when Kuwait was invaded, that could turn things around quite quickly. Global economies, the expectations there should be doing better, especially the Pacific Rim economies, and that bodes well for our exports. And then also the outlook for the exchange rate. The U.S. dollar sliding down is going to be good for our exports. Energy prices, this is a real tough call. You look out the window, and if we have another drought season, that'll be very harmful to us. We were seeing some very positive signs with Northwest Natural asking for a rate decrease. It seems, though, that they may be asking for some of that decrease back again as they're running into further troubles. The electricity area also is questionable, especially with Bonneville Power Administration needing to cover some of its debts, asking for some higher rates. So unless we see some of this moderating increase, which I think is happening, we've seen wholesale prices are down. People like PGE are going to be redoing their forward contracts. They should start to be asking for some rate decreases. We still have these problems with BPA, possibly not lowering those wholesale rates as much as we'd like them to. Stock market, it's had 8 weeks running now. With positive returns. I think just a few months ago, no one would have expected that really to have occurred. So we're hopeful that the worst part of the stock market is over. So I don't think we're going to see much of a hit either positively or negative from that sector. Corporate reporting, hopefully we'll get through this with not too much more problems. State and local government, this is a new risk that we're adding here. And let me describe this risk as one that's both nationwide and, of course, also for Oregon. The estimates are somewhere between $40 billion to $60 billion short in state budgets right now. And because states cannot deficit spend like the federal government can, and we've always heard, you know, the federal government, what can they do to stimulate the economy? Well, they could increase their spending, they could cut taxes, and that'll help out the economy. Unfortunately, states must do exactly the opposite in order to balance their budgets. They must cut their spending, or they have to raise their taxes, or some combination of the two. And that is going to cause what we call a fiscal drag on the economy. And that will be true here in Oregon. To the extent that has to take place, to the extent that the spending is cut relative to taxes being increased, is still a bit of an unknown as to the hit the state's going to take from this. But this will be a drag on the economy. This is a bullet that you cannot dodge. High-tech industry, once again, a very volatile industry. Our expectations are that it will do better in the near future. And then the longshore work stoppage, it appears that this will be settled and should not be a problem. And with that, unless there are some questions on the economy, I'll turn it over to...
Sure. Yeah, Representative Hayden.
Yeah, if you just amplify a little bit for me. I heard you say, I've heard it, and I think I heard you corroborate it, that when spending is cut, when taxes are not increased, when employees, state employees and local employees who are funded by tax dollars are laid off, that slows the economy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, yes, that does.
Thank you.
And what other, but I mean, I assume there are other influences on the economy to cuts in services. I mean, in terms of we're seeing a shortened school years, that has an impact, I think, beyond just the teachers and the school employees whose wages are affected, but I would expect that in terms of the ability to, the impact that that has on attracting business investment and job growth in a community, I imagine there would be influences there as well.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I think under that situation with the shortened school day, the only people happy with that are daycare centers.
Okay. Not parents.
Not parents.
Not parents.
So, Michael Kennedy will present the revenue forecast.
I'm just feeling a little insecure here, Tom. You've been looking at the upsides and downsides. You've kind of loaded this a little bit more on the downside, I think, on the upside, in terms of our risk factors here.
Mr. Chair, yes, I think that is true because of the it's more on the uncertainty part rather than like the state and local, which I think is more certain that it's going to be a drag on the economy. But I would put that all in light of changing the view that we may be into another recession. That probability, I think, is much less. And so these risks are all at a level that are a little more positive occurring.
More affecting recovery, rate of recovery than?
I think more, yes, more slowing down the rate of recovery rather than pushing us into recession.
Yeah, that's a little better. Thanks. Any other questions on the economic outlook? Okay, let's take the revenue forecast.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Michael Kennedy, economist with the OEA. And here are points I'd like to cover in this presentation. Let's move right into recent developments. What I mean by that are, what are the things that have happened in the past few months that have led us to revise our revenue forecast? Let's start off with where we were at the end of last fiscal year. Fiscal year 2002 was $910 million below fiscal year 2001. Now, a third of that, as you can see, was related directly to the pension and kicker refund checks that were distributed in that fiscal year, so one-time distribution. Beyond that, however, we had additional personal income tax revenue shortfalls related to capital gains primarily, but also other forms of income, including wages and salaries, interest income, dividend income, and personal business income, all declined year over year and resulted in a drop in personal income tax revenues. In addition, you can see there that corporate income tax declined $178 million. I put interest earnings on there because that's actually going to come up later. That's been a continuing issue with the general fund forecast. And then the other revenues are up primarily related to the tobacco trust and risk management transfers that were made in fiscal year 2002. So that's where we stood last fiscal year. Now moving on to what we know for this fiscal year. The first quarter is completed, and relative to our September forecast, personal income tax receipts in that quarter were $62 million less than we had forecast. In addition, corporate income tax was $12 million below our forecast. Now, as you can see, that is primarily related to estimated and advanced payments that were made in September following the forecast. They were considerably weaker. And those should be considered prospective payments, so they are an indication of what taxpayers believe will be their liability for this tax year. Now, there are some offsetting issues that we can get into later regarding that. However, I also want to look at the year-over-year. This is quarterly year-over-year change. And as you can see, for the first quarter of fiscal year 2003, personal income tax collections were just 1.7% below the year-ago figure. And in fact, that's following a number of quarters of significantly sharper declines. And so the issue here is that we could potentially be turning the corner, similar with what we're seeing in the economic data, that we could be moving from this declining episode to at least flat, if not positive, growth in the future. more significantly for corporate income tax, which for the last five quarters prior to this first quarter, '03, had declined between 20% and 70% year over year. It was down just 1.3% from the first quarter of fiscal year '02. So that's a significant change over recent history.
Michael, if we could go back to that one slide, we have a big dip there, 2003, first quarter, right? That, does that reflect what happens when the, you said that the collections were down in September because of a, what taxpayers are anticipating their tax liability to be. Does this dip on the 2003 first quarter, does that reflect the drop in actual payments for the 2002 income tax year with the April or with January payments? What is that?
Yeah, in fact, if you're talking about the lowest point and the point preceding that, those are, in fact, the third and fourth quarter of '02. That's exactly what that's reflecting. It's both the refunds and final payments issue that we'll get into later.
Okay.
And in addition, this is when withholding and estimated and advance payments have been weak. Mm-hmm. We're the first three or the first two quarters of this calendar year. Now, what does this recent information mean in terms of our revenue forecast? And what I wanted to do is go back a little and provide some context for this. What you're looking at here is corporate income tax revenues from 1978 to the present by fiscal year. And obviously the noticeable thing there is the incredible run-up, basically a 300% run-up between 1993 and 96-97. And that is directly related to that growth in business investment that occurred in the mid-90s, which benefited Oregon in particular because we are a supplier of a lot of the business goods, investment goods. So it helped us out. The question that we have been facing now for a year, year and a half, is how much of that was a permanent increase in demand, permanent increase in our productivity, our production, and how much could potentially have just been an acceleration of that investment and only temporary. And this really impacts what our forecast is going to be, because as you can see, the yellow line there is basically what you would expect to happen had that been a permanent increase in our production, a permanent increase in demand and our economic activity. And that's basically where we stood a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, moving into the close of session. Pretty much the market and everybody else felt, well, this is a new age, a paradigm shift, and this is where we're going to go from here on out. And in the last year and a half, basically we've been revising that estimate of how much of that was permanent, how much was temporary, until now we're pretty much back to, it was pretty much just this huge acceleration. Now we're suffering from the hangover, and eventually we will come back to growth that's more reflective of where we were before the boom. Exactly where we're going to end up in between those two lines, we won't know until we find firm footing, have a couple of years that look like normal years, and we'll be able to tell then what the true distribution there was.
So we'll know where we're going when we get there.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, this also plays into the personal income tax in that those firms have high revenues, high profits, pay them in terms of bonuses, stock options, et cetera, and that feeds into the economy. They also make demands on other sectors. And so it fed through in a multiplier effect to our entire economy and drove up personal income tax revenues as well into double-digit increases during those years. And the same issue is present here. Depending on which scenario you use, it has dramatic implications for what our revenues will be. You can see in 04 it's practically a $1 billion difference between whether that had been real versus illusory.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting the different scale between that previous slide and this one. The lines appear to be closer together, but we're talking about a lot bigger numbers.
Yeah. Personal income tax being roughly 90% of our general fund revenue. All right, so in terms of the general fund revenue forecast for the current biennium, we now stand at roughly $9.2 billion in revenues when added to the beginning balance, which is unchanged. We're looking at $9.6 billion in total resources. The magic number there in terms of the decline is $133 million, as we published last Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So that's the drop in revenues. When you compare that to the new expenditure number, which came out of Special Session 5, you get a technical deficit difference between revenues and expenditures of $112 million. Now, as you can see, the change there in the revenue sources is pretty much similar to past changes, predominantly personal income tax, down about $81 million. Corporate income tax is revised down significantly, $42 million. And then other revenues, primarily the interest earnings projection is causing that to be down $10 million. Now, in terms of fiscal year implications, just what does this mean we're saying for fiscal year 2003? We're looking at a total general fund revenue for this fiscal year of $4.9 billion. Now, that's 13.1% above fiscal year 02. Now, that seems pretty high, but we have to remember that the pension and kicker refunds went out in that fiscal year, and that arbitrarily makes this higher. What I've done is actually factored those out. So this is a look at the actual structural revenues. And in fact, we're projecting only a 4.5% increase in this fiscal year over fiscal year 2002. And that breaks out as an 8.6% increase in personal income tax revenues, something I will get to a little later here, a slight 2.6% increase in corporate income tax, and then there's a significant drop there in other revenues as those one-time sources go away that were used in 2002.
Okay, well, that's worth seeing in comparison. So we have the 13.1%, that's unadjusted for the kicker and the pension, and what we're really looking at then in terms of real dollars biennium to biennium is that 4.5
from the fiscal year.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yeah, in terms of really our revenue-producing capabilities, yes.
Thank you.
And so just to wrap up, this basically presents that same picture of a huge run-up during the 90s. The look we had at close of session was merely to be flat following that, as we were already seeing signs of weakness, but then to continue on that higher growth path. And that has since been revised downward due to these seriously lagging revenues. In terms of the longer term, you can see that this revision has propagated all the way out through the forecast horizon out to 2009. A significant amount has to do with basically a change in our impression about corporate income tax, that whole issue of permanent versus temporary. We've basically had a definite ideological shift in recent quarters, as it has just remained continually down. So the impact here for the next biennium, 2003-2005, the forecast has been revised down $500 million, 510 to be exact, and on out roughly $800 million in the 2007-2009 biennium.
That $510 million reduction in the forecast for the next biennium, have you taken that money out of one sector or area of revenue more than another? Where is that reduction coming from?
It's about 50-50 between personal income tax and corporate income tax. And so, I mean, in terms of relative proportions, corporate income tax has been revised down significantly.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you. The $10.9 billion for 03-05 is revenues only. assuming passage of Measure 28, or not factoring that in?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, it does, none of this includes Measure 28. And so that would be 400, I think, in 12 or 13 million that would be added on top of this were it to pass. And this is revenues only.
That's a good, good question, good point. So this is a current law forecast. Yeah.
And in terms of what our forecasted growth rates are, what our assumptions are here, as you can see, the current biennium continues to go down, even on an adjusted basis, to 7% below 9901. We expect then revenues to come back, adjusted for the pension and kicker refunds, about 13.6% over the next biennium as the economy recovers. Even better recovery for 0507. In part, that's due to the end of the bonus depreciation allowance. And so they actually have less deductions out, and that impacts corporate income revenues between the two biennium. And then leveling off to historical rates out in 07, 09. Now, there are risks to this, and I think there's one predominant one that I want to take a little time and get into, and that's this upcoming tax season. Now, for a little background, if we take what Oregonians will owe in personal income tax in a given year, the state receives that income tax in a variety of forms. We receive it during the tax year as withholding and estimated payments, so prospective payments on our liability. And then when the year's finally over, we prepare our returns, see where we really are, and we're either owed a refund or we make a final payment. Now, in terms of a normal year, Oregonians tend to overpay by about 4% during the year. And then when it comes time to settle up, there are more refunds and final payments, and there's about a negative 4% rebate back to them. So that's a normal year. Now, in 2001, in fact, Oregonians overpaid by about 10%. And thus, we experienced what we experienced in April and May, which was incredibly higher than expected refunds, much lower than expected final payments, and what I account as basically $250 million unanticipated outflow of dollars that happened just in those 2 months related to this issue. Now, the reasoning behind the much higher payments, estimated payments and withholding relative to liability boils down to how taxpayers basically calculate their estimated payments. And what we're hearing from the tax accounting community is that they basically base it on what you owed last year. It's called safe harbor method of making sure you'll never have a penalty. And what happens is because 2000 was so much higher, matter of fact, it was the highest liability year by far in Oregon's history, 2001 was much lower. If they just continue with that blind method, they were really paying much higher than they needed to. And so that's the explanation there. Now, in terms of this year then, 2002, what assumptions are we making about how this is going to play out? And in fact, underlying our liability forecast, we basically have them overpaying only slightly more, so about 5%.
Well, doesn't that reflect what the decline we saw in the September collections? Didn't you say that was in part because people were adjusting for what they anticipated would be a lower tax liability in the spring?
Mr. Chair, that is one of the factors that we believe. It could be potentially the case that they're underpaying slightly. I mean, there's a number of factors out there. We've had a number of law changes, including the delay of Measure 88. We have no way of knowing really at this time how people are adjusting one way or the other. That's why this is such a big risk, because there is room there for significant variation in what's going on at the moment. It's really hard to get your finger on it until basically you have the returns in your hand and can analyze them and say, here's what happened. And so we have it, what I would call slightly conservative, in that we didn't just assume that this was going to be a perfectly normal year in terms of what we're seeing now, in terms of how much they're paying, playing out as, you know, the 104% and the 4% back, but only slightly. We believe that since 2001, 2002 look fairly similar in terms of personal income, that really there should be no overpayment or underpayment issue. But then you have those tax law changes and a number of other issues, what the stock market ends up doing in this last month, whether people take gains or whether they take additional losses, issues like that. So we've played it basically close, but hedging a little on the side of dollars flowing out. The downside risk here is if somehow, for some reason, 2002 were to repeat like 2001, you could have an additional, you know, 100, 150, even 200 million going out that's not reflected in this forecast. Now, we believe the likelihood of that is extremely low, given that those 2 years are basically the same in terms of income. But it is there, so we wanted to make sure it was recognized.
Speaking of capital gains, have you touched on that in terms of capital gains as an as a component of the forecast for the next biennium? Where do, what are we looking at in terms of our expectations with respect to capital gains?
Right now, and in the last month, basically we've received the very first preliminary look at 2001 capital gains. And if you'll remember, we had capital gains down from $6 billion to $1 billion, 82%. Well, it looks like it's not going to be nearly that bad. It looks like more like about $2.4 billion, down about 54% in 2001, which is, it's kind of shooken us up a little bit in terms of we were using a lot of that decline to explain what we were seeing. And so now we're having to adjust. A lot of the decline was in those other income sources. So our look now at capital gains is to be basically flat between 2001 and 2002, and then to return basically to what we consider the long-term trend between 2003, 4, 5. I think we have it returning to long-term about 2005. So the impact there, really the biggest impact we saw in 2002 in that decline, that 200 and some million drop in tax payments. The other risk, Tom laid out a variety of risks to the economic forecast, and obviously those would feed into our revenue forecast. But in particular, I want to look at the stock market issue. The past two forecasts, as we've released them, the stock market has been on an upswing, and both times we said, well, the stock market remains a risk, and both times the bottom fell out and there were significant declines. Here we stand again, just having broached 9,000 barrier on the Dow, and if we continue to grow and have no problems, that could bode well for our forecast. But again, if in the next couple months we were to see a sharp decline, that could be a downside risk to the forecast. And wrapping up with a positive number.
Good old lottery.
Yes. Lottery revenues for this biennium are now forecast at $717 million. That's about $7 million above the September forecast. Now, when you adjust for the dedicated allocations, in fact, debt service was considerably lower than we'd been forecasting. So the net change in the ending balance is actually 9.4. Or the ending balance now arrives at 9.4 million.
So there. Senator Williams, didn't you want to ask if this accounts for a first class error?
No, Mr. Chairman.
You didn't want to do that?
No, okay. I didn't.
In fact, that 7 million increase, in part that was due to the jackpot roll-ups we'd seen in Megabucks and Powerball in recent months, which were higher than what you would have on average. Video continues to astound us all, and that it is yet to flag. But in addition, there's about $2 million in unanticipated administrative savings. So administrative savings for the fiscal year 02 were $2 million higher than what we'd been expecting.
Yeah.
So that accounts for the majority of change, and then there's the debt service piece. So in terms of the longer-term forecast, there's just a slight revision upward, and that is almost entirely due to just additional belief that video is as strong as it is, so we continue to revise up the growth rates as it continues to make us do so. We figure at some point the growth should fall into line with personal income growth, if nothing else. But then there is also the issue of basically fatigue, of people getting tired of particular, like traditional games tend to have this phenomenon. So that's one thing we've always had out there, is the potential for video, but it, so far it doesn't seem to be an issue.
Well, I think we've been looking at the stability fund coming with receipts coming off of lottery. Is this big enough to change measurably what we were anticipating in income to the stability fund from lottery, or is this not going to make much of a difference?
Well, Mr. Chair, the allocation to the stability fund would go from 15% to 18%,
right,
with the start of next biennium, mm-hmm. So it wouldn't affect anything on this biennium. But the increase there of about $6 million, would it be an increase of 18% of that? Mm-hmm. So it's be $1 to $2 million.
Okay.
I think probably the more important issue, Mr. Chair, is that it seems to be a very stable source of revenue that will be flowing into that fund.
Yeah, which we were counting on.
You can actually see that on this graph here as it details the revenues, but also in terms of their distribution. And the green hatched line is the education, what is now the Education Stability Fund. As you can see, it says 15% to 18% because it jumps.
Right.
And you can see the band getting wider there. So those are the dollars, particularly in 03-05. But most of those are only marginally changed from the prior forecast, in that the actual total dollars haven't changed a whole lot.
Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
Just a quick question. I was just wondering how much is in that stability fund currently, or more accurately, say, January 29th?
That number hasn't changed. I mean, we were looking at, what, 270 roughly, and then you take out the 150? Wasn't that about what we were looking at?
Prior to the release of the forecast, we had an estimated ending balance for this biennium after the May 1 transfer of $128 million. However, there's about $21 million of that, mm-hmm. which is in the Oregon Growth Account, which is basically a liquid. It's not something that could be liquidated and used. And so the estimate we have, and we'll revise that with this forecast up by, I guess we won't revise it because it will be a relatively small effect, less than $1 million. But that's about $107 million that would be available for allocation through the stability fund if you met the other criteria for use of the fund.
There's no earnings at all on that? I mean, not lottery earnings, but in some...
The earnings on the stability fund are still allocated by statute to repayment of lottery bonds for schools and for the scholarship commission. So that hasn't changed with the new education stability fund.
Paul, and maybe with Tom and Michael here, just not to signal anything, but as a matter of information, I guess, come January, where will we be with regard to the economic triggers on the stability fund? Will they be in place? Will they not be in place?
Well, the trigger on the employment is a two-quarter decline over a four-quarter period or 12-month period. That may not be in place, but the one that we're certain will be in place is the budgetary trigger, which is forecast being 2% below the close of session.
Okay.
So we're in no danger of okay. not meeting that trigger. And, of course, on the triggers, it's just one allowed okay. upon, along with the 3/5 vote.
Yeah. All right.
In fact, that's...
Look at that.
The sum total of the revenue portion.
All right. Questions, comments by committee members? In this case, we've all had a chance to digest it over the weekend, pretty much, from the newspaper reports of your presentation last week. Any comments by committee members? All right, thank you very much. I think my comment was, well, this wasn't as bad as we had expected it, been led to expect that it might be. So in relative terms, I guess that's good news. And we'll be anxious to see when we get, let's see, when will you be back? It'll be session February? Is that the end of February for the March forecast? Is that what it'll be?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The end of February for the March 1 forecast, and then we'll do the May 15th.
Well, sure. Yeah, just thinking that March forecast will be interesting to see how we're trending. Cedric?
Just for my own review, Mr. Chairman, while these gentlemen are here, the $310 million proposed tax increase would restore cuts that have already been made. The cuts to balance are in the budget now. So we're not at risk of having to cut another $310 million. We're at risk of finding another $127 million.
I guess it depends on what level you want to balance back to. Yeah. Michael?
That, Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, that the issue would be the ending balance you wanted to achieve. It would be 133 to get back to your 21 that you left at the end of session 5. Any additional or less than that, depending.
112 gets you back to zero.
Exactly. Not including the additional $9 million in lottery funds.
Okay. Well, that's right.
Which I haven't been including.
So that gets us to 91 million?
No.
It's 103.
103 million?
With no ending balance.
Right.
With no ending balance. But that meets the legal criteria for a balanced budget. Thank you.
The market might have a little problem with that. But okay. Other comments? Questions? If not, we'll conclude this part of the agenda. Thank you very much. Good to see you.
Thank you.
We have a break scheduled at 10:30. Obviously, we're going to work ahead of schedule here, which I hope doesn't bother anybody. Are we ready to go on the local school revenue forecast? Who's doing that for us?
Steve and Mazin.
Okay.
I'll go through that.
Why don't we take...
Let's take our break.
Take our break?
Yeah.
All right. There's been a motion to take a break.
Here comes Steve.
Yes. Come up and have a cookie, Steve. Committee members, Representative Walker brought us a bucket of cookies today. Thank you very much. I had those already. And we will be on break for 15 minutes starting again at 10:25.